Okay, so we're on Daf Tes Zayin Amid Beis, and we're about Tet Zayin Amid Beis. Okay, I opened it for you, and there we are at the two dots, which is approximately, let's say, 15 dot lines down from the top of the page. Now, just by way of introduction, Ha'ochel Nevelos U'Trefesh Katzim V'Ramasim, the Mishnah at the beginning of the third parak lists all the cases where you violate a lav, and for that violation you get a Chiv Malkus. And amongst them we have all these Macholos Asuros, you're not allowed to eat Nevela, you're not allowed to eat Trefa, you're not allowed to eat Shkatzim V'Ramasim.
What about Chalav Basar?
Chalav Basar is also true, but we're going to focus tonight. I don't know if we'll get to Basar B'Chalav. I have a whole shiur on Basar B'Chalav, but not for tonight. Okay. We're going to focus mostly on the word Shkatzim tonight, right? And these are kinds of creatures. And we're going to try to figure out when you eat it and how you eat it and what lavim you violate. And I tell you right up front, by way of introduction, that tonight's shiur, I'm just praying to the Ribbono Shalom to get me through this Gemara. Because if you don't know half of Masech Techulin, it's very hard to work through this Gemara. But, you know, I want to finish Masech Techmakis, and then we'll start a different Masech Techbli Neder, so we're not going to skip. So the first case that... Right, right. I don't know if we'll get to that tonight, but let's just go through the Gemara and see what we can accomplish. So, Amar Rabbi Yehuda. If someone eats a creature called a binisa it's called in Aramaic. And it's not just a regular binisa, it's a binisa debay krava. So let's understand that krava is the Aramaic formulation of the Hebrew word kruv. Kruv is cabbage. Cabbage grows from the ground. It's not on a tree. It's a vegetable. And binisa, Rashi says, is a tolas. Tolas means a worm. Hanimtzeis bikruv. And you'll find this worm inside a cabbage. And he gives you the old French word for it, silo. So the Gemara now records in the name of Rabbi Yehuda that if a person eats a worm that he finds in a cabbage, then malkinon le, we give him malkus, mishum sheretz hashoretz ala oretz. Okay? In other words, even though, keep in mind, that this worm is not actually crawling on the ground, but nevertheless, if it's crawling inside a cabbage, that's considered as if it's crawling on the ground. And therefore, you violate the prohibition that enjoins you from eating sheretz hashoretz al ha'aretz. And the Gemara tells us that indeed there was a story, Hahu di ochel binisa de bekarva. There was an individual way back when who ate a worm that he found inside a cabbage. Vinagde Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda was the head of the Bezdin there, and he decided, based on the evidence that he had, that Nagde, that he gave him Malkus. Nagde is the Aramaic word for Malkus. Okay. Now, if you take a look at Tosus, Dibra Maschil Binisa, he says, Pirish HaKuntris, Tolas HaNimtzeis Bekruv, V'nikra Tzaila. So first he quotes, Rashi V'Kosha, Maiko Mashmalon, Pshita. The Gemara seems to be making a big deal about this, as if we discovered something that we wouldn't have known otherwise. And Tosus finds this difficult. What is unique about Binisa that makes it such that I need a chiddush, I need someone to establish that it's called the sheretz, and if you eat it, you violate the law of sheretz hashoretz al ha'aretz. And here, Tosus quotes Rabbeinu Tam, who disagrees with Rashi. It's not a tolas, in the classical sense, not a worm, but rather, says Rabbeinu Tam, binise kmo dag katan. It looks like a small fish. In other words, the tsura is that of a small fish.
Like silverfish?
Like a silverfish, maybe. And where do we find this dag katan? Hanimtza b'machresha. And when they used to plow, machresha means the plow, they used to plow the ground. You know, the ground was dry and solid, but then they plowed it. And as a result of plowing it, apparently they exposed the outer layer of the ground, which is the dry layer. And underneath, there was some moisture that had been absorbed into the ground. And therefore, here, the dirt was liquidy, was moist. And that's where this fish was able to inhabit. That's where it was able to live. But again, it's not really a fish. It just looks like a fish. It has the features of a fish. V'kamash malon. And what is our Gemara trying to teach us? The afal gav de nimtza b'mayim had this same exact creature, this binise, been found inside the water, hayamuta. We'd be allowed to eat it. Why? Lefishiesho kaskasim. It has what we call simone dag tar. It has scales and it has fins. But afilu hachi loke, nevertheless, since you find it living, it inhabits the land outside the water, therefore it doesn't gain the benefit of being a fish, and therefore the simone tara of kaskasim are not able to be matirit. Even though had it been inside the water, it would be considered tar. But nevertheless, because he finds it on the ground, it is a sheretz, hashoretz, al haaretz. And therefore you get malchus. Okay. Now, let's understand that according to Rabbeinu Tam, we're talking about a sheretz that looks like what? A fish. It has the simone kashrus of a fish. But the problem is, where does it grow? It inhabits the land. And since it inhabits the land, we define it as a sheretz hashoretz al aretz. And the chiddush is that even though, if the same creature would have been found where? In the water. It would be a dag tahar. Nevertheless, that doesn't matter. It's not a dag at all, because it doesn't live in the water. Where does it live? It lives in the Aretz. And therefore you get Malchus as a Sheretz HaShoretz Al Aretz. Fascinating. It's the same creature. Had it lived in the water, it would be mutter to eat it. It would be a kosher fish. But since it lives in the ground, in this case in the Machresha, therefore it becomes a Sheretz HaShoretz Al Aretz. What were you saying?
So it's a function of...
Can you speak and drop loud? I'm sorry.
It's a function of whether the Sheretz Al Adama, right?
Right. Where do we find it living? If it's crawling on the earth, then it becomes defined and classified as a sheretz hashoretz al aretz, and it loses its status as a dog, even though it has all the properties of a dog. But the problem is, where does it live? Meaning, in the Havamina, we thought, forget about where it lives. Let's just look at the physical structure. No, where it thrives. Where does it live? Where is it it inhabits land, or it inhabits the water, the sea?
What if it does both? It's an amphibian.
Okay, so that we're going to get to in the Ritva. Thank you. That's the Ritva. But before we get to the Ritva, let's just finish up with Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam has an either-or situation. There's no such thing as an amphibian. According to Rabbeinu Tam, either this binise belongs to the dagim, mm-hmm. or it belongs to the shratzim. It cannot be both. At this point, that's Rabbeinu Tam. How do we determine at the end of the day whether it's a dag or whether it's a sheretz? Because you and I would say, well, if it's a dag, then since it has simoni tara, I can eat it? No. We don't classify it or categorize it as a dag. We categorize it as what? As a sheretz. And why is that? Because where does it live? Not in the water, but it lives on the ground.
So according to Rabbeinu Tam, anything that crawls on the ground, no matter what it's in one MR,
is a sheretz. Okay? Now we get to the Ritva. The Ritva is a different concept. Again, the Ritva is bothered by the same question as Tosus. What was the Chiddush here? Why would I think that you don't get Malkus for Sheretz HaShoretz Al Haaretz in the case of a Binise? What was unique about this Binisa that I thought it would be different? Says the Ritva, and he quotes this in the name of the Ramban, that we're talking about a dag tame. We're talking about a fish. But not the fish that Rabbeinu Tam understood that had simone tara, it has kaskasim, but rather the fish that has no simone tara. And therefore you get malchus by eating it for eating a dag tame, a non-kosher fish. However, darko lotzeis min amayim, it also leaves the water. And v'chaya b'telem amachresha, it lives in the ground, like we said before, the furrows that are a little bit moist. Heichan shadom alacha, v'kamashmola, what's the chiddush? Kevan de romes ala adama, since in addition to living, inhabiting in the water, it also crawls on the earth. Lokan olav, we give him malchus if he eats this creature, not just because he ate a dag tame, which he did, but mishum sheretz hashoretz al haaretz. So in other words, according to the Ritva, even though we're talking about a sheretz hashoretz al haaretz, which we're going to soon see how many malchus you get for eating a sheretz, but that's only in addition to getting malchus for eating a dag tame, a non-kosher fish. Because this personality, I call it Superman. You remember Superman was also Clark Kent?
Yeah.
See, does anybody, you know, anybody remember that? This is a schizophrenic personality. He's got double identity. It is on the one hand a dag, and on the other hand, it's also a sheretz. So as opposed to Rabbeinu Tam, who wants an either-or situation, take your pick. Either identify yourself as a sheretz, or identify yourself as a dag. Never the twain shall meet, there's no overlap. The Ritva, the name of the Ramban says, Nen, you could have a creature that is both at the same time a dag and a sheretz. And the Chiddush is that even though as a dag it was already prohibited as a non-kosher fish because it's lacking simoni tara, nevertheless I can add to it the status of a sheretz, hasheretz al adoma, al aretz, and it will incur with its eating a chiv malchus not only as a dag tome, but at the same time as a sheretz. So you're in really deep trouble, says the Ritva, in the name of the Ramban, if you eat this binise. So let's go over. According to Rabbeinu Tam, it's not a dog, even though it looks like a dog. Even though if it was in the water, it would be a dog tar. Because as opposed to the Ramban, Tosus understands that this binisa has simoni tar of a dog. Ramban insists that it has simoni tuma, it's a dog tome. But according to Rabbeinu Tam, it's a dog tar. The only problem is, where do we find it living? It's not living in the water. It would be a kosher animal if it was living in the water, kosher fish. But we find it living on the ground, on the earth. And therefore, it has the status exclusively of a sheretz hashoretz al haaretz. According to the Ramban, it has a double status. It's both a dag tame because it lives in the water, but it also lives on the ground, and therefore it's at the same time it's a sheretz hashoretz al haaretz. So we're going to see soon how to calculate exactly how many sets of malchus you get for eating this binisa that, according to the Ramban, is a double personality. It's also a dag and it's also a sheretz haaretz.
Sheretz, it means creeping?
Right, something that creeps on the ground, correct. Now, Rabosai, in order to appreciate this sugya, I need to give you a little bit of introduction, and I'm giving it for myself as well, because we're not learning Masechta Chulin, and it's so difficult to jump into the sugya in Makkos, and you're getting sort of like the tip of the iceberg, when this is part of a gigantic sugya in Masechta Chulin on Daf Samach Zayin Amid Beis. Let me just give you a little bit of information for background. There are basically three categories of of creeping creatures, or let's call them worms for argument's sake. There's one worm that you could find in the tree itself. That's called in the eights, in the, let's say, the bark of the tree. That's clearly a sheretz, and for sure it has the status of an Iser Sheretz with all the malchus that you'll get about it. Now keep in mind, since this sheretz comes from an eitz, from a tree, therefore it's considered on the ground. What I mean to say is that the tree, because it's attached to the ground, has the same status as the ground itself, and any creature in the tree, let's say you would cut open the tree and find a creature living, then you know there are all sorts of, I don't know, termites and different insects inside a tree. Those are considered sheretz, hashoretz, ala oretz, because the tree is considered part of the oretz. Okay. Now I'm going to push to the other extreme. What happens when you find a worm inside a fruit? Imagine you have a tree, there are branches, and there are fruits growing on the branches of the tree. So believe it or not, if I cut open a fruit and I find a creeping creature, that's not a sheretz. Why? Because the fruit is not considered the aretz. It's not considered part of the ground.
Okay. It came from the tree.
It came from the tree, but now it becomes a separate entity. It's a pre, and it's not aretz. Okay. In the middle between, okay, we'll see about it. In the middle between these two extremes, bear with me for a minute, we have something that we find inside a vegetable. Now, a vegetable is also called a pre, right? Maybe it's not called a pre aretz, but we call it pre hadama. But nevertheless, there's something radically different between a vegetable and a fruit. A fruit is seen as something separate from the tree. It's an entity unto itself, and therefore it's not part of the aretz. However, a vegetable that grows in the ground, like a cabbage for example, is considered to be part of the aretz. And therefore, even though it's a pre, it's still pre-hadama. Okay, so what unique status do we give to the case of a bug or a tola worm that we find inside a piece of cabbage, right? Inside a pre-hadam. So the Gemara says the following. Sheretz, I'm reading, this is a summary here from the Masifta Gemara. He gives you an overview of the Gemara in Chu. And he says the following. Sheretz be'ikara eitz, if you find a sheretz inside the bark of a tree, that's called a sheretz, afal pishalo ra'es avir ha'ol. Even though I cracked open the tree and I find it inside the tree, it never actually, at least not on its own, saw the light of day, you know, saw the air of the universe. It's called a sheretz. Why? Because the tree is the aretz. However, nivra bepri talush, if let's say I have a fruit and I cut it off the tree, like let's say an apple, and I open up the apple, and lo and behold, I find a worm in the apple. He says, "Eino nechshav l'sheretz." If I open up the apple and find a creature inside the apple, it's not called a sheretz, because again, as we said before, the pre is separate from the aretz. Ad sheyira es avir ha'olam. Until the worm comes out into the air. Meaning, let's say I would bite into an apple, and lo and behold, I found, you know, in the other part of the apple, I found half a worm, right? That's everyone's fear. So technically, according to Gemara Chulin, I did not eat a sheretz. Why? Because it never actually crawled on the earth. Okay? And then, what about a sheretz hanivra bepri biodo mechubar? Let's say, for example, the fruit, it's not an apple that you buy in the marketplace, you know, or you pick it up off the kitchen table, but there's a bug, a worm in the apple when the apple is still attached to the tree. And the Gemara goes back and forth on this question. Do we say that since the fruit is still attached to the eitz, it's still attached to the tree, therefore it has the status of a sheretz ha'aretz? Or do we say, no, the fruit by definition is separate, is independent of the aretz, and therefore it's not a sheretz? However, what about the case of a tolas that's found in a kruv, in a vegetable? So Tosfos is going to present the thesis that in such a case, it's a sheretz gomor, it's a complete sheretz, even though it's found inside the cabbage. So what's the difference between a sheretz that's inside a fruit, and if the fruit is detached, that sheretz is not prohibited until it's roes avir olam, and the case of a kruv, of a cabbage? And the answer is, the cabbage is an extension of the aretz. It has the same din as what? As eitz. Just like as we said that if you open up an eitz and you find the sheretz inside the eitz, it's called sheretz ha-shoretz al-aretz, because the tree is an extension of the ground, so too, a cabbage which grows in the ground is considered like an eitz, and any bug that I find inside the cabbage is by definition a sheretz. And therefore, this is the background to Tosfos' kasha. So what was the chiddush of the Gemara Lagabi Benisa? After all, Benisa is found where? It's a worm in a cabbage. If it's a worm in a cabbage, and the cabbage has the same status as the eitz, it's mechuvah lekarka, it's connected to the karka, it's not a separate entity, then by definition, it's a sheretz gomur, and therefore, what was the Gemara being mechadish here? What was the new innovation of Rabbi Yehuda here, that you get malchus for eating a tolas, which you find in a cabbage? And Tosfos was so bothered by that question that he said, no, we're dealing with a benisa that looks like a dog. It has the simoni kashrus of a dog. And in fact, if it was found in the water, it would be a kosher fish. Unfortunately, it inhabits the ground, as we spoke about before, and therefore it has a din of sheretz ha-shoretz ala-oretz. And here's where the Ramban says that the chiddush of the Gemara is that even though this is a dag tomei, because it lives, the benisa lives in the water, and it doesn't have simoni tara, nevertheless, in addition to being a dag tomei, it gains the status of a sheretz, because it also lives in the ground. So that's just a little bit of background to this sugya. Omar Abaye. Abaye says, what happens if a person eats potisa? Rashi says, potisa, bala sheretz hamayim. Okay. Now, before we figure out what a sheretz hamayim is, please take note of the fact that Rashi says, bala. What does bala mean? He swallowed it whole. Why doesn't Rashi just say that he chewed it up and he swallowed it? Okay. So first, before we get to that question, what is a sheretz hamayim? And how many violations does one incur by eating, or at least according to Rashi, swallowing a sheretz hamayim? So the Meiri gives us a list of creatures that are called sheretz hamayim. One of them is called alukos. I don't have a dictionary here, but I think alukos are those jellyfishes. Have you ever seen them? You know, they could be dangerous in some cases. If you ever go swimming off the shore of Florida, you'll see, you know, sometimes they put out a whole thing, watch out for the jellyfish. Because these jellyfishes can somehow penetrate into your bloodstream, they sting you, and it could be dangerous. Okay, this is a sheretz that lives in the waters. It's not a fish. It's not a dog. It's a sheretz. And then we have tzfardim. This is very interesting. You have frogs that live in the water. The question is, can a frog also be considered, based on the Ramban that we just saw before, an amphibian which also has the additional status of a sheretz ha-shoretz al-ha'aretz? Okay, but right now, for our purposes, just to simplify matters, a tzfardea is considered sheretz hamayim.
So, the temple is saying that it's not a function at all of if it actually crawls.
Right. We're just talking about something that lives in the water. It doesn't have the status of a fish because it doesn't look at all like a fish. And it's a sheretz hashoretz b'mayim. What's the status of a sheretz hashoretz b'mayim? So the Gemara says, loke arba. He gets four sets of malchus. And Rashi explains, Lokar ba, shnei lavim, ksuvim, b'sheretz hamayim. There are two different verses in the Torah that specifically prohibit eating a sheretz hamayim. Okay, and we'll see what those psukim are. One is in Torah's Kohanim, in Sefer Vayikra. The other is in Mishnah Torah, that's Sefer Dvarim. But in addition to being a sheretz hamayim, there's a general iser sheretz that appears twice in the Torah, whether it's a sheretz ha'aretz or a sheretz hamayim or a sheretz ha'of. All shrotzim come under two lavim, all inclusive umbrella lavim. Haksuvim b'sheretz stam, where the Torah doesn't specify what kind of a sheretz is in the water, it's on the ground, it's up in the air. One of them is lo teshaktu es nafsho seichem b'chol hasheretz hashoretz, and the other is v'lo sitamu bohem. And since in these two lavim the Torah speaks about sheretz in a general sense without specifying mashma, it includes bein sheretz hamayim, bein sheretz haaretz. So sheretz hamayim has two unique lavim, where the Torah spells out mayim, sheretz hamayim, and as a sheretz, it also comes under the two general lavim that include all shrotzim, and therefore, in the bottom line, you violated no less than four different lavim in the Torah. Each one incurs a chiv malchus, and therefore you'll get four sets of malchus. That's almost 160 malchus.
Now for sheretz ala aretz, you only get two.
Well, no, we're going to see that in sheretz ala aretz in a minute, how many malchus you get. That's going to be the case of nemola of an ant.
We don't know.
We don't know yet. But for sheretz hamayim, we have four different malchus. Two is sheretz hamayim, and two are included under the general lavim of shrotzim.
Just a quick aside, is a lobster considered a sheretz?
A lobster?
It's in the water, it crawls on the land too.
My guess is that a lobster is a fish, but I don't know enough to...
But it doesn't have scales.
Right, it scales of fins. I think it's a dog tummy. I don't know. I could be wrong about that. Okay, for that we'd have to really do our research.
Okay.
Now,
by the way, the sheretz, do you get tamei from touching it?
Only a dead sheretz, not a live sheretz.
Oh, okay.
Right. So again, let's go through the four lavim. According to Rashi, number one, we have al teshaktu es nafsho seichem b'chol sheretz hashoretz. That pasuk is in Vayikra Yud Aleph, and that's a general lav for all shrotzim. And we have lo sitamu bahem, which is also in that same place, a general lav. And Rashi understands that al teshaktu is a reference to eating. It's interesting, even though the pasuk doesn't say al tochlu, it says al teshaktu, but Rashi understands that the word teshaktu is synonymous with the word tochlu, and therefore by eating a sheretz, you violate al teshaktu. And the word lo sitamu, according to Rashi, also implies eating. And these two lavim, al teshaktu and al titam, lo titamu, are kolel, as we said before, all categories of sheretz. And then with regard to sheretz hamayim, specifically there are another two lavim. One of them is in Vayikra Yud Aleph, v'sheketz yelachem yibsarim lo tochelu. I'm sorry, I didn't read the whole pasuk. Mikol sheretz hamayim, sheketz yelachem yibsarim lo tochelu. And there the Torah specifies sheretz hamayim. And also in Dvarim, in Parshas Re'eh, in Perek Yudalit, it says, v'chol asher ein lo snapi v'kakeses lo sochelu. Okay. So that's the case of Potisa. And now we have to ask the question, why does Rashi say Bala, he swallowed it live? And the answer that we're going to suggest is the following. A Potisa is a very small creature that inhabits the water, and it's so small that it's less than a kizayis. Now the law is, in general, that for achila of macholas asuras, for eating prohibited non-kosher foods, in order to get malchus, the minimum shear of achila is how much? A kizayis. This potisa is less than a kizayis. So Rashi says, afal pikein, even if it's less than a kizayis, you get malchus. Why? Because it's a birya. A birya bet resh yud hey is in chulin a concept that indicates you ate a live creature as it was created by God in its whole form. Rashi says, how can you eat the entire birya? Don't you chew it up? If you chew it up, it now loses its status as a birya. It's not whole anymore. And since it's less than a kizayis, you wouldn't even get one set of malchus. So Rashi answers, bola, he swallowed it. And if he swallowed it, he has now taken into his body a birya, and for a birya, he violates all of these four lavim, and that's why he's chayev arba, loka arba. What about sheretz hashoretz al haaretz? How many malchus do you get for that? And that's the next gemara that says that if he eats nimala, nimala is an ant, loka chamesh, he violates five different malchus. First, there are two malchus that include all shratzim, as we saw, lo tishaktsu, lo titamu. And secondly, it's a sheretz hashoretz al haaretz, and the Torah prohibits a sheretz hashoretz al haaretz on the three different lavim. Let's look at Rashi. V'loke chamesh, shnei lavim aksuvim v'sheretz stam, k'mo shepi Rashi. We've already discussed this with regard to potisa, which is a sheretz hamayim, and now with the nemola, it's a sheretz haaretz. It comes under the general lavim of sheretz. And that's two lavim. But shlosha lavim haksuvim b'sheretz haaretz b'toras konim. In Sefer Vayikra, the Torah repeats itself thrice with regard to a lav for sheretz, hashoretz, al haaretz. What are these three psukim? They're all in Vayikra Perek Yud Aleph. In Pasuk Mem Aleph, it says, V'chol hasheretz hashoretz al haaretz sheketzu lo ye'ochel. In Pasuk Mem Beis, in the same chapter, Yud Aleph, V'chol hasheretz hashoretz al haaretz lo sochlum. And finally, in Pasuk Mem Dalet, it says, V'lo sesamu lo titamu es nafshosechem v'chol hasheretz haromes al haaretz. Okay, those are the three lavim written in Vayikra Yud Aleph, all of which specify that we're talking about a sheretz that's al haaretz. Notice, please, if you will, that the third pasuk is a little bit different than the previous two psukim. There it says lo sitamu es nafshosechem, but keep in mind that Rashi holds that lo sitamu means don't eat them. And another addition, another change, is it says sheretz haromes al haaretz. In the other two psukim, it says hashoretz al haaretz, and here it says haromes al haaretz. So please keep that in mind as we go through this sugya, because there may be a difference here. Now, if you look in the Meiri on our sugya, he gives you a whole list of shratzim, sheretz, hashoretz, al haaretz. I'll just read the list to you. It's all based on the psukim there in Vayikra Yud Aleph and Parsha Shmini. And it says over there, Akbar and Tzav, Ha'anoka, Koach, Halta, Chomet, Tinshomes, Choled, Nechoshim, V'akravim, Chipushis, V'nedel. So these are all different types of bugs and insects that crawl upon the face of the earth, and they're all included under these three lavim of sheretz, hashoretz, al haaretz. In addition to that, besides these three lavim, he also violated the two general lavim of Sheretz Stam, sach hakol, five different lavim. So if Rabosa, we go back to the case of Binisa, which according to the Ramban fits under, you know, Superman Clark Kent under two different identities, and it's both a Dag Tomei and at the same time a Sheretz HaSheretz Al Aretz. Now, how many sets of Malkus would you get for eating Binisa according to the Ramban? Six Malkus, five the Torah Sheretz, and one the Torah's Dag, because it's a Dag Tomei. Next case. He eats a Tzira. A Tzira is a hornet. It's some sort of a bee that lives in different environments. It actually flies, but also crawls on the earth. And the Gemara says, Lokesh Shesh. In addition to the five Malkus that he gets for eating a Sheretz HaSheretz Al Haaretz, because this insect crawls on the ground, he also gets a sixth Malka. Why is that? A sixth set of Malkus. Mishum Sheretz Ha'of. Because it is a creature that flies through the air. And there's a separate lav for a Sheretz Ha'of.
Yes, why isn't the general prohibition apply? Why aren't these specialized ones included in the general one?
So they are.
So why should you get separate set of malchus? No.
Not sure I understand your question. Let me just try to say it again. We're saying that an insect could come under various categories,
yes,
and it'll incur multiple sets of malchus based on its multiple identities. Meaning, a Sheretz HaSheretz Al Haaretz, in addition to the three lavim that you violated, those engender three sets of malchus, Betorah Sheretz HaSheretz Al Haaretz, it also is a general Sheretz, and all Shrutzim fit under two separate lavim that incur two sets of malchus. If I add the general lavim, the two lavim of Sheretz in general, to the Sheretz HaSheretz Al Haaretz, which are three separate lavim, we have five sets of lavim. Now in the case of Tzira, it also has another personality. It's a Sheretz HaOf. It flies through the air, and therefore we get a sixth set of Malkus, because it has the propensity to fly. The Meiri says that the Tzira develops wings later on in its life. It's born without wings. He compares it.
They're like primitive.
Right. He compares it to a zvuv, to a fly. He says a fly in its initial stages is like a worm, and later on it matures and it develops wings. So in the first stage, it's already a Sheretz Haaretz, because it only moves by crawling on the earth. And later on, when it gets wings, there's an additional prohibition that is tagged on, and that is Sheretz Ha'of. Where is the lav in the Torah for Sheretz Ha'of? That's in Dvarim Yudalit, in Parshas Re'eh. And there the Torah says, V'chol sheretz ha'of tamei hu lachem lo ye'achelu. They shall not be eaten. Now there's another pasuk in Vayikra Chaf, which says, Lo tishaktsu es nafshoseichem bibehema ubi'of. And Rashi is bothered, why isn't that an additional lav in the case of a sheretz ha'of? So let's take a look at Rashi, Dibra Maskil Tzira Lokesh Sheish. Rashi says, Chamesh Mishum Sheretz Ha'aretz, Echad Mishum Sheretz Ha'ov, Tichsiv V'mishne Torah, V'chol Sheretz Ha'ov, Tomi U'lachem Lo Yochelu, Avol, but the love of Lo Sochlu, Lo Seshaktu Es Nafshel Seichem V'behema U'bi'ov, which is written in Parashas Kedoshim Tiyu, in Vayikra Chof, Eino Min Aminyon, that's not included. The lav b'sheretz ksiv. The Torah here specifies behema and oaf. That's not a sheretz. The afal gav d'chsiv be, even though at the end of this very pasuk, after it says behema oaf, it says ubechol asher tirmos ha'adama. Nevertheless, Lashon Brios Gedolos. Who? The language here of Behema V'Of Asher Tirmos Ha'Adama is a reference to larger creatures. V'Sheretz Lashon Ktana means a Birya Ktana Unemucha Shenikeres Bihilucha Bekoshi V'Nireis Kirocheshes. We're talking about a crawling kind of creature that pulls itself with a great deal of effort. It's very small, very low on the, almost ground level. And that's called a birya ketana. That's called in the Torah's language a sheretz. But when the Torah speaks about behema v'yof, asher tirmos ha'adama, that's talking about a larger creature that actually walks on the ground, almost like a human being, if you will. That's called behema v'yof. That's not sheretz ha'of at all. So sheretz is a specific title that's singled out, that's designated for these low, crawling, creeping creatures that are relatively small. In the case of a sheretz ha'of, the Torah says, "Kol sheretz ha'of tomihu lachem lo yechelu." And the case of a tzira, which we said is a hornet, is included on the sheretz ha'of. But at the same time, since it crawls on the ground, and that's what it looks like before it develops its wings, it only crawls on the ground. It's a sheretz hashoretz al aretz. And insofar as it's sheretz hashoretz al aretz, it incurs five sets of malchus. Now that it flies, it's a sheretz ha'of, and we add another set of malchus, so we give six sets of malchus. So if I were to test you, a quiz you on an exam, and ask you, how can I violate with one achila six sets of malchus, you would give me two different answers. One answer would be the tzira, and the other answer would be, according to the Ramban, the binisa, because that too belongs to different categories. In the case of tzira, it's a sheretz hasheretz al aretz plus a sheretz ha'of. In the case of binisa, according to the Ramban, it's a sheretz hasheretz al aretz, but it's also a dag tomei. It's a non-kosher fish. Now here the Rishonim go to town. We have a principle in Halacha called Kidei Rishasa. And we've discussed it on many occasions. For one Maisa Avera, you can only get one punishment. So let's say, for example, a person would violate two different Lavin in one fell swoop. And for one Lav, he would be chayev, let's say, Misa. And for the other Lav, he should be chayev Malchus. He'll only get one punishment. Right, that's called Kidei Rishasa, Mishum Rishachas, Tom Machayev, Vietor Machayev, Mishum Shtei Rishasa. The Torah is very stingy about giving out punishments. So the Rishonim here ask, in the case of Binisa, in the case of Potisa, Potisa, in the case of Nimola, in the case of Tzira, we get multiple Malchus. Why don't we apply the principle of Kidei Rishasa? You know, choose your Avera, and we'll give you a punishment for that Avera, and we'll single it out, but not to punish him for many different Averos. And they give a very fundamental answer. The case or the principle of Kidei Rishasa applies when you have an overlap of different Maisei Avera. In other words, you were able to violate different Averos with one action in one fell swoop. That's not what we're dealing with here. What we're dealing with here is to find out how many different Lavim the Torah prohibits with regard to the Achila of one particular creature that crawls the earth or flies in the sky or inhabits the waters and the seas. If you eat with one achila this object, how many different lavim enjoin you from eating the object from this creature? And for each lav that you violate, you'll get another set of malchus. Whereas kidei rishasa is only when you violate two different averos that happen to go to overlap in one maisa. You were able to do different averos together at one time, and we're only going to give you one punishment. That's because each avera cancels the other one out, so to speak. You know, there's a clash. But in the case where we're dealing with one avera, eating one particular creature, then you will get malchus for each lav that you violate by eating that creature. Again, please keep in mind as we go through the sugya that according to Rashi, we're dealing with a case where you swallow a creature whole. That's called a birya. And therefore, even though it's a very small creature that has less than a kezias, it still is considered an achila, meaning the Torah requires what we call an achila chashuva in order to be chayv malchus. You have to do a significant achila. If you nibble at something and it's just a few crumbs, that's not an achila chashuva. You have to eat a kezias. That defines an achila. But there's another way of achieving an achila chashuva, even in something that's less than a kezias, and that's called what? A birya. Says Rashi, well, if you swallow it, you've eaten a birya. If on the other hand you chew it up, then it's no longer a birya, and therefore you'd only be chayav if it has a kezias. Tosus here has an additional chiddush. Now, we're not going to go through the entire Tosfos, this long Tosfos called Reseik, but if you focus on the middle part of Tosfos, he says the following. He says that Lave Deshrotzi, Ika Lave Deshrotzi, it's about, if you want to underline it, about 10 lines down in the Tosfos, he says, the Ika Lave Deshrotzim, Delo Nichtavu Beloshon Achila. Sometimes the Torah says with regard to a sheretz, lo tishaktu, or lo titamu, it doesn't say lo sochelu. And Tosa sees a great deal of significance in the fact that the Torah deliberately avoided the language of achila, and it teaches us, may osam lo yilke ad sheyochal habirya shlema. If the Torah doesn't use the word achila, then the Torah is talking about a blia, you know, where you swallow an entire creature. Aval vaday heichad iksiv be'lav b'loshen achila. Lucky af kishabirya ein ashlema. Even if he chews it up and it's not whole, or he eats parts of it, again, he's going to have to eat a minimum shear of a kezias, but if he does so, he gets malchus, because the Torah requires achila, and you don't need a birya. But when the Torah deliberately obviates or circumvents the language of achila, then it's talking about eating a birya. Eating a birya means you have to eat it whole.
Isn't this kind of eating a part of a living creature? Isn't that a violation?
It depends. If the Torah says lo sochelu, then even if you eat part of it, you're chayev, but with one condition, one proviso, you have to eat a shear of a kezias. If, on the other hand, the Torah says lo tishaktu or lo sisamu and titamu, it doesn't say achila, then you have to eat it whole as a birya. And if you chop off part of it and you eat it, then you don't get malchus. Now that we're on the subject of lo tishaktu, the Gemara quotes a different pasuk where the Torah also says lo tishaktu. This pasuk is in Vayikra Perek Chaf, and the Gemara says the following: Omar Rav Achai, Hamashes Nekavov Over Mishum Lo Tishaktu. If a person needs to, you know, to have a bowel movement and he holds himself back, he violates the law of Lo Tishaktu Es Nafsho Secha, because Lo Tishaktu Es Nafsho Secha means don't make your bodily existence repulsive or disgusting. And this is something that's considered repulsive when you have to go to the bathroom and you hold it in. The Gemara goes a step further. Oh, wait a minute. Before we get to that, I want to point out to you that Masha Esnikovov is a double, it comes under two different categories, what we call Gdolim and Ktanim. Meaning sometimes you have to defecate and sometimes you have to urinate. And both are considered included under this Isur of Hamasha Es Nekovov. That's why the Gemara of Achai uses Nekovov in the language of plural, because it's referring to different parts of the body. And if you hold back, then you violate this Isur. In fact, there's something interesting. The Mishnah Bura says that, this is in Simon Gimel, that in the case of someone who's Masha Atzmo L'Ktanim, he holds back from urinating, he violates another Lav. bad enough that he violated the Tishaksis Nafshasechem, he also violates Lo Yeh Becha Akar, which means that it's possible that if a person has to urinate and he holds himself back, he may become impotent and he won't be able to have children, and that comes under a separate law of Lo Yeh Becha Akar. And to prove his point, the Mishnah Berurah quotes a Gemara in Masechta Bechoros on Daf Mem Daled Amud Beis, and there the Gemara speaks about this lav of Lo Yeh Becha Akar. Now again, there are a lot of details here that have to be, you know, fleshed out. You know, how long does he wait and how long does he delay? You know, if he delays for a minute, I don't think he violates the lav. The Ritva has a whole long discussion here about whether this is taken as a Doraisa, is it really the simple pshat in the Pasuk, or it's only the Rabbanan with an Asmachta. But be that as it may, the Gemara is very, very strict about this Avera, and we have to be very careful about it. By the way, I forgot to tell you that the Meiri gives a list of Shratzim that are classified as Sheretz Ha'of. He has in the list Zvuv, Yitush, Chagav Tamei. That was the grasshopper case. What, there are two types of Chagovim. There are Tmeim and Tahorim. Today we don't know exactly how to differentiate, although the Yemenites have a tradition. And then he has Tzira, which was the case of the hornet that we discussed before that flies, and Dvora, a bee. So in the case of somebody who swallows a hornet or a bee, if I assume correctly that initially it doesn't have wings and it crawls on the ground, plus later on when it has wings it flies in the air, you would violate six different lavim because of Sheretz Ha'of is one, and Sheretz HaSheretz HaLaoretz, which is five different lavim. Omar Rav Bibi Bar Abaye, Haiman Deshase Bekarni Deumna. Back in the day, they used to have something called bloodletting. Somebody told me that he read an article that there's a new theory that bloodletting for certain types of high blood pressure is a good thing. I don't know. As far as I know, bloodletting is out of style. But back in the day, they used to do this. And they had a special utensil in which they would sort of remove the blood from the body. Today you would talk in medical terms, you know, about different kinds of blood tests that they do where they take blood out of your body. But let's say there's a utensil that's specifically used to get the blood out of the body. Haiman deshasi, a person takes this utensil and he decides to use it to drink his soda pop. Is kum ka'avar mishum lo teshaktu. He violates an isur of lotashaksu. In other words, it's considered repulsive to the nefesh. Lotashaksu, if you use something that's designated for blood, to take human blood out of the body for drinking purposes.
What about a mohel?
Say it again, a mona?
A mohel.
A mohel.
And,
right, but he's not drinking from it. He's just,
no,
you know.
He draws out the blood.
The blood and then spits it out. Hopefully he doesn't drink from it. Right, but if you would take that kli and then use it to drink out of, you would violate the slav of lotashakt.
Isn't that...
You follow what I mean?
Yeah.
And now the Ritva adds that he believes that in this case, clearly, we're dealing with an Iser Dirabbanan. This is not the simple pshat in the Pasuk. He's willing to say that perhaps in Rav Achai's frame of reference, Mashis Nikov really violates the Doraisa by withholding himself. But in the case of someone who drinks from this blood utensil, that receptacle, that's not considered a deraisa.
His punishment is getting AIDS.
I don't know. Maybe you're right. I don't know if he'll get AIDS. But basically, any kli, any utensil that's designated for blood, you're not allowed to use for drinking purposes.
Is that because the blood is a nefesh?
Oh, that's an interesting shot. Maybe because the blood itself is identified as the nefesh, but I think what we're saying is it's something so despicable, you know, to drink out of the same kli that's used for blood. But you're right, the blood is the nefesh.
It's not whether there's any blood still in the kli.
Right, if there's blood in the kli, that's a different Easter. That's an Easter kares of blood.
There's also, if you have feces or urine on a utensil, you shouldn't drink.
Right, absolutely. Absolutely.
Hygienic laws.
Right. The Torah is interested in hygiene. hygienic laws.
But you shouldn't explain the Torah, the hygienic laws.
Omar Rava Barav Huna, Risek Tisha Nemolin. A person took 9 ants and he chopped them up into small pieces. Now what happens as soon as he chops them up? It's no longer birya. So now what are we going to need if it's no longer birya? Kezaris. Hevi echad chai. He added 1 live bug, ant in this case, and he joined it together with the 9 chopped up ones. Vishliman likazayas. And now, because the 9 crushed ants were only, let's say, 8/10 of a kazayas, or 9/10 of a kazayas, but now he adds 1 live ant, and now all in total, he has a kazayas, but he's also eating a birya. He says, lokashesh. In this case, he gets 6 cases of mal. Here's the third situation where he gets 6 sets of malchus. Chamesh mishum birya, because a nemola, if you eat it whole as a birya, you violate 5 lavim as a sheretz ha'aretz, as we discussed. And echad mishum kezayis nevela, because a sheretz, once it's dead and now you chopped it up, it becomes a nevela. In other words, the Isur Nevela doesn't only apply to behemos and to chayos, it also applies to insects. A sheretz is also a nevela. And therefore, this nemola is, it, together with the other 9 pieces forming totally a kezayis, the volume of a kezayis, is also comes under the Isur Nevela. Now, I'm a little confused here. Because if he mixed them all together, what is he doing? Is he swallowing it or is he chewing it? Meaning, if he's chewing it, then even that one nemola that's alive and it's whole is now being chopped up. So he doesn't really violate the Isur of Sheretz HaShoretz Al Haaretz. Again, he violates Isur Nevela, but not Sheretz HaShoretz Al Haaretz. So I don't know exactly how he pulls this off, but I think what's going on, if I understand correctly, and we'll see Rashi if he adds anything, he swallows the whole kit and caboodle. And therefore, by swallowing it, he violates the Isur Sheretz HaShoretz Al Haaretz because he's eating a birya. Take a look at Rashi, Bishum Kezayis Nevela, Shekeshebolo Humesu Mitztarif LeKezayis Nevela. And you'll see that there's a little, what do they call that thing? What's that thing that you throw? You know, it's round.
Asterisk.
What's it called? Not a boomerang. You know, the kids play with a frisbee, right? You see that little frisbee? We call it a frisbee. That frisbee is Rabbi Kivager. Rabbi Kivager is bothered here because Rashi says that he swallows it and then it's dead, and therefore it's part of the Kazayis Nevela. Rashi's got a problem here. On the one hand, in order to incur 5 sets of malchus, he's got to eat it live. He's got to swallow it. That's called birya. On the other hand, if you want to attach it to be mashed in the shear of a kezayis and make it into a nevela, then it's got to be dead. So is it alive or is it dead? So Ricky Vega says that it must be that when he starts swallowing it, at some point it dies, and now it becomes a nevela. And even though it's only a small part of a fraction of a kezayis, but together with the other 9 crushed ants, he's got a full kezayis. But Rabbi Kivager is bothered by this, because the Gemara in Chulin has a similar case with regard to a bird, and the Gemara says that, just see if I can find Rabbi Kivager, he says, Aval tzipar, Olim Chiyusa. Okay, so he's referring now to a Gemara about Sipar in Chulin Daf Kuf Beis. And what do we find in Chulin Kuf Beis? The cases where a man swallows a bird and it's alive. And the Gemara says that he violates Aver Minachai. Why? Because when he swallows it, it's still alive. So it seems from the Gemara in Chulin that it's considered al pidin as if it's still alive when you swallowed it. Again, somewhere in the process of swallowing it, it's going to die. But yet, al pidin, at the moment of bliya, it's considered alive. So then how could this nemola be considered alive when he swallows it? And at the same time, it's mitztarif to a shear of kezayis and nevela, which is only meaningful if the condition, if it's dead. And that's what Rashi says, it's dead. So if Kivega wants to say there's a difference between a bird and an ant, he says in the case of an ant, zutra chiyusa, it has a very minimum lifespan, so to know, it's the thread of life is very thin. And therefore, meis b'shas bliya, as he's swallowing it, it dies. So on the one hand, he was bolea chai, and that's called a birya, and he incurs five violations. But on the other hand, it immediately dies, and therefore, he violates nevela. And we commit tzarif into a shear of nevela. However, he says in the case of tzipar, olim chiyusa. You know, the tzipar stays alive for a longer period of time. So within the context of your achila, when you are bolea, when you swallow a tzipar alive, it's considered Avram and Achai, and it's not considered dead because it's going to die only later on. So the Nemola will die, so to speak, immediately. So Tolkidei the Bliya of an Nemola Chaya, which is a Shlema, which is a Birya, it dies, and it already immediately Tolkidei the Achila becomes an Avela.
Is there any minimum size for a Birya?
No minimum size whatsoever. You swallow a small fly or a mosquito, you have incurred, again, if you do it deliberately, you have incurred five different sets of malchus because you violated sheretz. Well, I shouldn't say that. Actually, in the case of a fly, we're talking about sheretz, sheretz ha'of, sheretz ha'of, so there's only one law. But I mean to say, let's take the case of an emola, you swallow a live ant. It could be a small ant. It doesn't have to be one of those big.
It has to be alive.
And it's alive. And if it's alive and it's a birya, then you incur five sets of malchus. Rava Amar Rabbi Yochanan, afilu shnayim vahu. Why do you have to tell me, Rava, that he ate nine crushed ants together with one live ant? Even if he crushes two ants and one of them, which is alive, is mashlim the shear of a kezayis, so he's got two crushed ants plus one live ant, he might be able to get a kezayis. And Rav Yosef Amar, afilu echad vahu. You could have one crushed ant, which is half a kezayis. Again, it's got to be a pretty gigantic ant, I don't know. And you add to it another ant that's alive, and together you get a kezayis. V'lo pligi. And the Gemara says this is not a machlokes here. Basically, Rava and Rav Yochanan and Rav Yosef are all saying the same thing. Ha beravarve v'ha bezutri. It all depends on what the size is of these nemolim. You know, if you have gigantic nemolim, then enochinami, you can reduce the number and still get a kezayis. If on the other hand they're small nemolim, very tiny ones, then you're going to have to get a whole bunch in order to crush them and arrive at a kezayis. The question here is, this seems so insignificant, like so secondary, like why does the Gemara have to bother going through this whole tararam, you know, whether it's 10, whether it was 9, whether it was 3, whether it's 2.
Cover different cases.
Okay, I mean, it seems to me that the Gemara could have given just a principle over here. Take a look at Tosas, Divya Maschav Afilu Shnayim. He says, V'yim tomer machidushu b'shnayim yosem yibeser. In other words, if you're talking about a case of shnayim that has a kezayis, they're very large ants, so what have you added to my case where you had 10 ants, you crush these small ants and finally you arrived at a volume of a kezayis? Basically, I think what Tosfos is asking is the principle is one and the same. Do you have a kezayis or you don't have a kezayis? Why do you have to tell me exactly how many large, ants and how many small ants? There is a chiddush over here. What is the chiddush? The cave under ata kishu chai sholem mashmilo kezayis. Afal pishim hoye merusak kmo acher loye mashlim al kezayis. I'm a vitation of molim to ika. Sagi afilim nisrachnu kulam hoye mashlim sheyesh pahem harbe. Tosa says the following, that when you crush up nimolim, then the shear of the nimala is reduced. In other words, a crushed ant is not as the volume is not as great as a whole ant. So if he has 9 crushed ants, then all he needs is one very small ant to be mashlim the kezayis. Now, what happened if he would have taken that shlema, that one small live ant, and he would have crushed it? It would not have been large enough to be mashlim the kezayis. But the chiddush is that since now it's whole and it's alive and he didn't crush it, then we look at its volume as it is now. We're not concerned about the fact that if we would crush it, it would lose some of its volume. Aval kasher achas miruseches v'achas gedola mashlima. Let's say, for example, you have one ant that's crushed and one very large ant that's mashlim the shear. In Yerasku Sashlema, if you were to crush this large, you know, live ant, Yakta in Shira will be very small, and now between the two of them you don't have a kezayis. So the Gemara wants to be mechadish that it doesn't matter. Now it's Shlema. And when we want to calculate the volume of the ant, we look at it as it is now. We don't have to look at it as what it would be, what size of our volume would it be after it was crushed. Now he's eating it live. And the Ritva doesn't like this Tosfos, and he insists that the Chiddush is simply that sometimes you can find larger ants, and two of them could be mashlim the shear of kezayis. Sometimes the ant is much smaller, and it cannot be mashlim the shear of kezayis. There's nothing particular about, you know, the Chiddush that if it would have been chopped up, it would have lost that volume to be mashed in the shear of kezayis. We're going to end now. I just want to say 2 or 3 lines about the next Gemara that we're going to learn. The Mishnah says that amongst the cases which incur a chiyuv malchus is the case of ochal tevel u'maisa rishon. And if we go back to the Mishnah for a split second on Daf Yud Gimel, the Mishnah in this list has the cases of Tevel Umaisa Rishon Shalonitla Trumaso, which means that when you have grains that are cut down from the ground, then they are Tevel until you mafresh Truma, until you mafresh Maser. And not only that, but even Maser itself requires its own hafrosha. So there's something called tevel shomaser rishon, and the Gemara is going to add that there's something called tevel of maser oni. Right? We have 3 different categories of maser. We have maser rishon is given to whom? To the Levi. We have Maaser Sheni that's brought to Yerushalayim and eaten in Yerushalayim, the Kedusha V'Tara. And then we have Maaser Ani, in which we give 1/10 of our produce to the poor people. And in each case of Maaser, there's something called Tevel Shel Maaser. And that's what we're going to discuss, Bli Neder, next week. So I'll wish you all a good night, and thanks for joining me. And I hope we'll see each other tomorrow if weather permits. Okay, let's try to figure it out.